those windows are going to leave us sliced.
Like corned beef on a Kaiser roll. Welcome to the Indiana Jones Universe, the podcast that explores the incredible adventures of the world's greatest globe-trotting archaeologist, Indiana Jones. Each episode is a casual and somewhat humorous opinionated conversation with a slightly sophisticated analytical study of the expanded universe content from the Indiana Jones franchise. You can expect to find discussions about the adventures of young Indiana Jones, the further adventures of Indiana Jones comic books, the Staff of Kings and Emperor's Tomb video games, the Indiana Jones novels, the original soundtracks, and so much more. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Indiana Jones Universe podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 87. And today we are here to continue our discussion of the Marvel comic series, The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. Today we are looking at Trial of the Golden Guns, issue number 27, the finale to the two-part story, Trail of the Golden Guns. Important to note that actual title change there, which is intentional for whatever reason, unlike the other two-part stories in the Further Adventures series, they decided to not have subtitles for this one. For example, you know, The Search for Abner, The City of Yesterday's Forever is the subtitle of that particular issue. This one, they just decided to change the name of part one and part two by sort of doing a clever switch of those words, trail and trial, which, just to get right into it here, I thought this could be a great way to open the episode. To me, that is a very intentional choice, I feel like. Trail of the Golden Guns maybe kind of symbolizing the opening of that comic and the fact that they are sort of searching for the Golden Guns, a bit of a journey type of thing. But Trial of the Golden Guns, what do we think of that sort of symbolic meaning maybe for this second part?
Yeah, I think it works. And I think it works because in the first one, they are on the trail of the Golden Guns. They are trying to find where they are. And then in the second one, they know where they are. And it's a trial to overcome this army and the Count and to actually retrieve the Golden Guns. And then, of course, there's the other trial, which is the shooting contest. So I think the titles are, you know, cleverly done for these two comics.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I think, you know, the idea of talking about sort of the symbolism of the titles, you know, what are they trying to imply here with Trail of the Golden Gun, Trial of the Golden Gun? There's clearly a difference there, and we'll kind of explore that a little bit more as we get into today's episode. But let's just get right into it. Obviously, the cover is Indy falling out of the shattering glass window, which we'll talk about that scene in just a moment. Obviously, that's where the opening quote came from today. Peter and Beth are also falling out of the window, too, attached to some sort of rope. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that the guns are blue. I mean, it would make more sense if they were, you know, gold, because it's golden guns, although maybe those are just some, you know, other soldiers who are shooting at them and not actually supposed to be the golden guns. But picking up right where we left off from part one, Indy is tied down to four horses and ready to be punished with a whip and a sword from Pugachev. And it's this ancient and barbaric custom known as being drawn and quartered, apparently. And Indy is frightened for his life as the ropes are pulling him. And you kind of wonder, how on earth is he going to get out of this?
As before in the last comic, Beth is going to save him with her sharpshooting skills yet again, and she's going to shoot the ropes, except for the last one when there's a horse in the way. And this, friends and dear listeners, is why you always keep your knife sharp, because if you're ever being drawn by a horse and you need to cut the rope really quickly, you need a sharp knife. But I have to ponder, it seems like a lot of trouble just to go for some honor, you know? These guns, they're trying to get them so that they can hold a shooting contest, and here Indy is about to be torn to pieces. So there's a lot of things to fight for, but this one, it's really about the glory and the fortune and glory, isn't it?
Definitely. And one of the things that Indy mentions very early on is he's really interested in the Golden Guns as a piece of American history. And he emphasizes that really clearly, that it's American history, it belongs in a museum. Of course, that's always his motive, but this in particular, the story, the legend of Buffalo Bill, is so important. And so it's nice that they tie that in with his granddaughter, Beth Cody, coming in like a badass, you know, with her rifle to detach the ropes and save the day for Indy, right? So there's these great linear moments with multiple angles that demonstrate the entire sequence of events of Indy sort of barely hanging on, right? The horse is charging for the fence and Indy's going to get dragged along. And then finally, you know, Beth comes in and finally is able to shoot the ropes. And Pugachev here looks quite menacing. I really liked his character design there. Obviously, Indy getting tortured with a whip is kind of, you know, this ironic sort of situation that we have actually seen before. And after this, you know, obviously, there's a great, you know, kind of quote here, you know, hilarious but effective shots of Indy sliding around the enclosure. And he says, you know, to your point, I've used this jackknife on hundreds of archaeological digs to scrape dirt from relics. I just hope it's still sharp enough to help me see tomorrow, right? So clearly, obviously, he needs to get that pocket knife because obviously he's just barely in one piece after this really exciting sort of fight here with Pugachev.
And I have to say, these action panels, I think, are really well done. It reminds me of when he's being dragged by the truck. But then, of course, everyone's woken up by the gunshots and, you know, Peter comes out. And this is, if you're a spy, this is why you don't tell people who are still alive your plans and that you are a spy. Because now Indy's still there and they know that that Pugachev is a spy for Count Salkovich.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Not a great moment by Pugachev there. Obviously, Rostov is furious and quickly rushes over after hearing all these gunshots, and that's how Beth was also able to come save the day. And Indy explains that Pugachev was a spy for Salkovich. So again, we've pretty much confirmed at this point that Salkovich did in fact steal the Golden Guns, which at the beginning was just sort of a sort of hypothesis by Beth herself. Peter informs his grandfather immediately. And you'll notice that Indy puts his fedora back on in this scene, which is also a nice, great detail. Now, when they go back to talk to the chief, there is a absolutely hilarious shot in this next scene. I'm not sure why it caught my attention so much. This is on page 5 of the comic, right at the top, where there's this moment where the chief, you know, who is, you know, just about to sort of pass away. I mean, he's really sort of on the end of his life here, and his arms, you know, are sort of like kind of held up above him to kind of symbolize that he wants the glory of the Golden Guns. And Peter, you know, is kind of coming to tell him about this news that Pugachev was a spy. In the background, you see this hilarious smirk from Indy in what I think is a pretty unrealistic interpretation of Harrison Ford, but it just made me laugh so hard. I don't really know if this was intentional, but it's sort of funny how, you know, the chief is slowly dying and Indy can be spotted in the background with this sly grin on his face. His fedora is covering his eyes. It is absolutely hilarious. And, you know, my interpretation of this, you know, besides the fact that it's just one of the worst sketches of Indy I've ever seen in my life, one might actually interpret this as Indy acknowledging his opportunity to retrieve the guns for the museum now, right? Now that the chief is slowly dying and he's not going to be able to actually get the guns back, maybe that's where Indy can step in and finally get what he wants. So maybe that was a little bit of an interesting reading there, but you know, Beth looks so concerned in the background, and meanwhile, you have this hilarious looking shot of Indy. I'm not sure if you noticed it, but for whatever reason, it stood out to me.
Yeah, maybe some selfish motives sort of showing themselves there, but that's pretty funny, and it sort of does, yeah, contrast the serious tone of the moment. After that, we have Peter's grandfather, desperate to restore his honor, and then, you know, he sends them on their way, and we get this recap of the last comic where we see, you know, the Buffalo Bill and the shot from the bullet going through the train, and the swords again, when they were kidnapped by the Cossacks, and we have a great, it's just a great sort of montage recap, and kind of like a movie poster, you know, with like the red cavalry behind them. And then, of course, when he's hit on the back of the head, which I kind of prefer this illustration better. And then he's being drawn and quartered, and we're back into the present moment where they're on their way to the fortress where the Golden Guns are kept.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought this was a really incredible montage. I mean, we've seen this done in other comics before, but this one in particular, I think page 6 was completely full of this incredible, absolutely stunning montage and overview of all the events that took place in part 1. I mean, frankly, you didn't even have to read part 1. They go into so much detail here. I mean, this sort of collage style, you know, really, I can't explain much more without actually having, you know, all of the listeners out there actually looking at it, because it's just a fantastic illustration. Now, Indy admits to Peter here that, you know, the reason he really came to retrieve the guns was for the museum, right? Because the firearms are such an important part of American history. And again, this is what we talked about last time, this strange dynamic of allies, but also enemies, right? Because both of them are trying to retrieve the guns, yet in the end, it's going to be Beth and Peter in a shootout. Now, as we find out at the end of this comic, it's not actually like a duel, but instead it's more of like shooting at targets and figuring out who can get the most points. But again, just something about the dynamic and plot isn't super convincing to me. I'm not sure if I was really that invested in Peter and the Cossack troops kind of joining forces with Indy. Something about it still feels strange to me. However, there's a hilarious moment in the background here, again, really focusing on little subtle details, when the chief is literally incandescent with rage in the background after overhearing this conversation. It is absolutely hilarious. If you just look very closely, you can notice he's just sort of furious. And Indy is, again, quite persistent about the fact that, you know, this is his chance to finally kind of rewrite American history, so to speak. So finally, Indy gets to ride his horse to find Salkovich. And Peter says here, go with fortune. That to me might be a reference to Temple of Doom. I'm not exactly sure, but I thought it was interesting again that, you know, they're so focused on that historical significance of the golden guns.
Yeah. And I like the little side moment where basically the narrator or whatever of the comic says behind them, Peter Rostov smiles, sensing kindred spirits. And I think that's one of those sort of moments where the comic, you know, it interjects in a way that adds a little bit to the dynamic between the characters. So I thought that was good.
No, totally. And that's when Beth notices the gleam in his eye, right? And she says it's like a gambler who is about to draw an inside straight, right? So part of that grave robber archetype is sneaking in there, right? And they have this conversation that they both admit that they kind of wanted a little bit of excitement from this adventure, right? They didn't just want it to be, you know, sort of boring, right? And this goes back to, I guess, what Beth was talking about, how, you know, the U.S. is so civilized. Again, that to me also is unclear. Like, what does that even mean? So I don't know, that was unclear to me, but again, I do really like what you said there when Peter overhears the conversation and sort of smirks. Now, after a day of travel, Indy finally reaches the fortress, and they have to basically climb this ridge to get there. And it is a stunning, I mean, absolutely stunning sketch of Salkovich and his estate. And he built this estate into the cliffside, so much so that the windows of his castle are actually surrounded by cliffs. And Indy is separated from the castle by this gorge that is almost a mile deep long. So Peter basically has this master plan. He said, the barracks that are across the way on the cliff are filled with the Red Cavalry. So he decides to fire mortars with grappling hooks inside of them to break into the cliffside. So while he coordinates the assault, Indy will secure the fortress from inside, and the other group of Cossacks who split off earlier when they finally left camp are going to kind of be this diversion on the other side of the castle. So Peter is very persistent to retrieve those guns, and the Cossacks will literally fight for the chief to restore his honor and pride. They are certainly very subservient in that way.
Yes, I do believe the cost-benefit analysis on this invasion plan might not pay out to very much in terms of lives lost versus guns retrieved. I do see this whole honor aspect as their motivation for sure. And I enjoy the panel where the gates are open and then you have, you know, the Red Army soldiers versus the Cossacks and the whole charge. It reminds me of like the Light Horseman charge in Young Indy, which is, you know, a great scene, as you know. If you haven't seen it, definitely go watch it. Anyway, after that, it's another montage and the comic says, and the kindest word for what follows can only be slaughter. And it's just everyone dying. And, you know, you can see there's a lot of death put in for these little guns. And then, of course, we have a great moment where the grappling hooks are fired and you really get that sense of motion as, first of all, you see the loaded shells, then the firing of the mortars, and then you follow the grappling hooks through the air until they hit the stone cliffside before Indy jumps in some sort of padded suit with a few other people towards those windows.
Totally. I mean, it's a really, really great battle sequence with terrific drawings as well, like you were mentioning. Really great comparison there to the Light Horseman charge on Beersheba. And one thing, you know, right before that battle, actually, which I wanted to kind of throw in here, you'll notice Indy and Peter shake hands as a result of their collaborative efforts for victory. So again, kind of coming back into this idea of allies versus enemies again. Once the fight begins, you know, as you said, the mortars are fired and Indy and the soldiers use the grappling hooks to cross the gorge to reach the cliffside and basically barrel through the windows, which again is the cover and the quote from today's episode. And it's kind of a fun moment here when Indy and his comrades jump from the cliff and swing onto it. You know, looks kind of like a fun moment, you know, again, bringing us back to the vine from Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. And Indy is afraid that they might have an uneventful crash landing into the windows. And the first room they break into happens to have the golden guns in a display case. Like, it just happens to be there already, right? Like, it's such a lucky shot there. Now, one thing I did want to mention that kind of came up, and we've talked about this before. Again, maybe we're just reading into it too much, but I thought it was interesting. The choice of green for Beth's outfit throughout the entirety of the comic was sort of interesting. I'm not sure if you had anything to say on that or just the entire look of this comic as a whole.
I think they're intentionally using different colors to distinguish the characters. So, like, Beth is green, Indy is kind of red and brown, I mean. But, for instance, if you look at maybe, like, page 12 here, you see they do use brown for Indy's hat, but they use red for his jacket. So I think they're just sort of doing a color thing to draw our eyes, sort of like, you know, in the cover panel, you see Indy going through the window again, but the guns are blue, and so that's like trying to draw your attention away from the guns and towards Indy smashing through the window. So I think they take sort of creative liberties with colors in order to direct the audience.
Wow, that's a really great point. I didn't make that connection. Yeah, that's really interesting. And, you know, during the scene, actually, which is kind of interesting, you know, as Indy comes near the case, you'll notice his eyes widen as he looks at the golden guns. And out of nowhere, Count Salkovich appears. You could really call him Count Dooku. They look basically the same.
I know, right?
You know, and he is standing next to Pugachev, who orders Indy to drop his gun. And the dialogue for Salkovich, I just wanted to say this right here, is extremely well written. It's very sophisticated, yet menacing. He's smart enough to not underestimate Indy's diversion and his master plan. And Indy even says himself, "You're pretty smart, Salkovich, for a slug." And he's like, "Your words pain me deeply." You know, so it's just, there is some really great dialogue with Salkovich here. And he opens the case to hold both guns in his hand. And he says, you know, "I admire their political significance, their craftsmanship." And he just turns and point blank fires on two of the Cossack soldiers right there. And so he immediately just point blank kills those soldiers. And, you know, obviously Beth is stunned. Quite an intense and brutal interrogation scene. But Salkovich finally reveals that he plans to launch an attack that will destroy the Cossacks. And so then the Bolshevik reign will be free to concentrate on their other enemy, Hitler. And so this is when Indy mentions that Decker, Ephraim Decker, would surely be glad to hear that. "It's a shame I'll be too dead to tell him," you know, right? Because, of course, his interest in the Golden Guns was purely historical and political. But I thought it was interesting, again, that, you know, they're so focused on that historical significance of the Golden Guns.
And I have to say, these action panels, the illustrations for Count Salkovich, I think they're really good, because you have like a very menacing face. He has the sort of dignity of a count, definitely, you know, very much like Count Dooku here. But the way they use shadows to emphasize his sort of menacing intentions, I think is really well done, especially with all the low shots looking up to him. First of all, like when he's holding the two guns, coming up on like page 15, you see sort of a similar scene, but this time he's got a different kind of whip, a Cossack bullwhip. And he's even more menacing looking in this one.
Totally, yeah. And I think there's something about Salkovich as a villain that is a little bit more convincing than some of the other ones. And that is one of the reasons I like this comic as well, is because there is sort of like this duel fight, which you don't often get. You know, it's always somebody escaping and running away from Indy, and they happen to just get other people to do all of sort of the fighting for them. But here, Salkovich is pretty proud of his abilities and goes directly after Indy, which is why Indy is sort of kind of still the hero of this character, but maybe a little bit different than we normally see. Now, one thing I wanted to mention here is, you know, once this sort of entire chaotic fight begins, after Pugachev finally kind of gets attacked by this other Cossack soldier, you notice that Indy starts to throw books at Salkovich, and there's a hilarious quote here where he's like, I hate to do this to first editions, but we've got to take advantage of the distraction, you know? Such an Indy thing to say, grabbing the bookshelf and taking all those books off the wall and these priceless, you know, books and throwing them at Salkovich. Now, Salkovich decides to destroy Indy with, like you said, a Cossack bullwhip. And I thought this was a really, again, clever use of, like, the irony of using Indy's own weapon against him. We've seen this before in a couple of instances. Here in particular, they really kind of go full throttle with it. And meanwhile, Beth actually escapes on her own while Pugachev runs after her. And there's also another interesting montage that I wanted to get your take on, where she sort of sets all these spontaneous traps for Pugachev. And again, her sort of ingenuitive and, you know, kind of fun wit kind of comes into play here when she's able to kind of stop him. You know, there's a quote from the narrator where it says, footsteps that are nothing but bouncing billiard balls, right? So she kind of really kind of, you know, sends Pugachev in the wrong direction and sets all these traps, you know, kind of in the basement of this castle while Indy is quickly trying to escape and find the ammunition room.
Yeah, talk about alliteration there. But I have to say, it also feels a lot like Home Alone, but, you know, with Indiana Jones, instead of, you know, a paint bucket, it's a priceless antique vase that's about to be smashed, or the tripwires by the curtains and stuff. And it's really going to drive Pugachev insane, but I think it's well-deserved, and I'm happy to see him meet his demise a few pages later. But we get to this duel with Indy versus Count Salkovich. And there's an incredible panel on page 17, you know, dueling with their whips and like just the way the lines lead to each other and surround both characters' sort of faces. I think it's really well and artistically done.
Oh, totally. Yeah. An amazing bullwhip fight. So intricate in terms of the illustration here. And this is when Indy attempts to escape on his own. He finds the ammunition room and Salkovich comes from behind with the bullwhip that shatters a whole granite wall. And there's this epic, you know, villain shot of Salkovich with the bullwhip. And I mean, I think the drawings here really illustrate the physical attributes of this fight, but also the entire antiquity room getting ransacked and destroyed, you know, during this whole thing. And I like what you said about the line work in terms of the whip. They're very, very clever about the way they show the whip, and in particular, how the actual length of the whip surrounds both of them. It's really, really clever, I think, in terms of the way they do that. And a great detail is Salkovich is wearing the golden guns on his belt. Remember, he took them from the case and used them to shoot those two Cossack soldiers point blank and then kept them on his belt. So if Indy wants the golden guns, he's got to get to Salkovich. He can't just steal them in a room and just let somebody else, or in this case, Salkovich, kind of fall to his own death. He needs to be defeated if Indy is going to get the golden guns. And you'll notice Indy is like physically sweating and he steps backwards to try and stay alive, which then transitions into the shot of Beth hiding in this aviary.
Yeah, I have to say one more thing about that scene with Indy and the Count. I'm really getting like Duel of the Fates sort of music vibes in my head at that moment. And the sort of the detail about the powdered lead is really important because, first of all, yes, that would make it incredibly heavy. If you've ever dealt with lead, you know that, as I have. But also, it'll come into play again later. But as you say, we enter the aviary, and Pugachev finds Beth there and opens the cages. And it's like a trap, you know, like in Tintin when the champagne corks are all firing at the door and then they open it. But instead, you know, he gets hit by the birds and then she throws a stool. And then Pugachev meets his much-deserved end falling from the cliff.
It is a very interesting scene, isn't it, to have Beth and Pugachev in an aviary. It really reminds me of Hitchcock's film The Birds and the idea of unleashing this, you know, large cage of birds to attack somebody. And Beth uses, of course, the bench to knock Pugachev out the window, and he falls into the gorge, which, again, Duel of the Fates, I guess, would be a little similar comparison there, as you were talking about, with, you know, Pugachev falling into that sort of pit of doom. Now, again, I really like the idea of transitioning back and forth between two parallel actions to emphasize the cinematic style of Indy, right? So you have Indy going after, you know, Salkovich, and then you have Beth against Pugachev. Really clever that they did that, because again, you sort of feel like that would be something that you would see in a film. And Indy is certainly struggling to fight back against Salkovich here. And there is a great sketch of the grand staircase in the castle and an amazing shadow of Indy on the wall of the staircase. Salkovich is highlighted in red and, you know, you can see the outline of the whip on the light from the chandelier, which eventually Indy decides to jump onto the chandelier. So it's just a really kind of cool shot there that really kind of caught my eye.
It's really quite the composition, quite the, you know, dramatic lighting that we're having here. And you'll notice Indy has the high ground,
right,
you know, parallel reference going on there. And, you know, he says, it's a good thing this mansion is equipped with all the amenities, because he jumps onto the chandelier, and because the lead lines the bullwhip so heavily, it transfers electricity and electrocutes the count. And that's a great example of Indiana Jones in the moment using his head to think his way out of a situation in a way that, you know, maybe most other people wouldn't think. You know, instead of just using violence, he used his enemy's weapon against him. And that's sort of the cleverness of Indiana Jones, in my opinion.
No, totally. And they emphasize this a lot in the video games, where you can use your environment around you to whip things down on enemies and be very creative. One of my favorite instances is in Staff of Kings, when they have the fish tanks and you can grab the squid and throw it at the soldiers, you know? Isn't that just great? You know, just to get really creative. And it's so funny, too, because, like, I don't know if this was intentional or, but it's really funny because when you grab the squid in Staff of Kings, Indy like literally hurls it towards it, and there's a sound effect of, like, you know, this splash hitting the face and the guy just falls over, you know, so it's really great. But anyway, yeah. So once Indy finally, you know, kind of wins, quote unquote, which is symbolized actually really well when he is standing over Salkovich with the guns pointed down towards him as he lies there dead, so to speak. I thought that was a really great low angle shot to emphasize that, really creative there. And then Indy steals the golden guns and tries to escape with Beth. And so Beth actually, again, very, very clever of her to set a fuse in Salkovich's arsenal so that the entire cliffside will be blown into smithereens. But they can't escape because Salkovich, clever as he was, cut the grappling hook ropes, so there's no way for them to escape. So the only way they can climb is up. So they climb up the mountain. Meanwhile, I'm not sure how this happened, but Salkovich is somehow still alive from this electricity, and he is up above shooting his rifle at Indy from above. And as he prepares his next shot, the entire mountain explodes.
Yes, talk about lucky timing. I mean, there are several instances, I think, in Indiana Jones when it's not his cleverness that saves him, but just sheer luck. And then these ropes fall down from the heavens, and it's Peter and the other Cossacks. The explosion has demoralized the other Red Army troops and to the point where they've surrendered the fortress. And now Beth and Peter are able to have their sort of dual shooting contest thing.
Totally. And for this ending scene, you know, which is so intriguing, and I think it's really interesting in terms of how they set this up, and a lot of kind of interesting details to go over here. But after the long journey back to the camp, the chief anxiously awaits their return. So this sort of triumphant tone of returning to camp becomes a little bit more somber when Peter and Beth now are engaging in the shooting contest, which was sort of mentioned earlier. And at first you sort of thought maybe it was a duel or a shootout. But now it's sort of clear that they're actually going to be shooting targets, and they're going to basically fight in this competition of who can get the most points, who is the first person to miss. And of course, we know that Beth is very good with a gun and a rifle. She has excellent shooting skills. And again, we have these amazing illustrations in this collage slash montage style that demonstrate the fine focus of the eyes and the target. It's unbelievable. I mean, there's lots of horses around. There's guns firing. The narrator is explaining everything that's happening in this shootout. We don't actually have any dialogue. And there's moments where you see kind of, you know, Beth shooting this target, and there's a close-up on her eye, just a really beautifully drawn collage of kind of emphasizing the idea of the eyes focusing on the target. And Indy finally realizes how much the chief cares about these golden guns. I mean, he is practically about to pass away, and he is still sort of barely just figuring out, you know, that this guy really is so devastated by the fact that he does not have the golden guns anymore, and he will literally give up anything to get them back. So Indy kind of feels for him a little bit, and that sentimentality transfers actually to Beth. Once she approaches the final target, she stops and looks at the chief dying. And you'll notice that panel, there is not any narration, there is no thought bubble, there is no quote. It is just her looking at him laying there. And then in the next panel, I know what I have to do. And it's a close-up. And I think the biggest question, which is confirmed later, is, does she miss the target on purpose? And I think that was her intention there.
I have to agree with you there. I think that part is really well written in the fact that there's no dialogue. It's just all done with, I guess, in, if this were a film, the actors. But I believe she threw it. Because if you think about it, all those lives that were lost in the attack on the fortress wouldn't have amounted to anything if she had won, because the chief's honor wouldn't have been restored and he would have died anyway. And then, you know, no one would have been happy. But she made the better decision here and, you know, threw the shot, but just barely enough that, you know, he felt his honor was restored and he got to have the guns in his, you know, dying moments before, you know, before Peter awards them back to them.
Yeah, and, you know, after hours and hours of competitive battle, you know, Beth finally loses, clearly on purpose, like you mentioned. And, you know, when the chief finally reaches out to grab the golden guns, you know, his eyes suddenly close after he smiles. And that's his final moment, right? Just before he passes away, he's able to feel the golden guns in his hands. And that's kind of a poignant moment, I feel like. And again, going back to the way it's really dramatically written, this ending scene, I'm such a fan of it because they're always about fun. They're always about, you know, fighting. They're always about the sly commentary, the, you know, kind of witty dialogue. But to have a little bit more of sentimentality here is really interesting. And this is when Indy and Peter both realize the sacrifice that Beth made. And because of this, Peter decides to give the guns to Beth right after the chief has passed away. And he says, "Your compassion is every bit the equal of your courage, and such a gesture must not go unrewarded. Let the legend of Buffalo Bill remain unbroken. Take the golden guns, my friend, and take with them our gratitude." And that is a really great moment, terrifically written quote there, when Beth gets her grandfather's guns back, and Mr. Decker, of course, receives all the information he wanted. You know, he's a very Marcus Brody type character. But in the end, and this is actually said as a line of dialogue, Indy only gets a good story to tell. And I really want to get your take on the ending of this comic, because I feel like it's really intentional the way they end this. Indy, obviously, of course, notorious for never really actually obtaining the antiquity and putting it in a museum. But here, what does he really gain? And most importantly, how come Beth gains the golden guns over Indy? And should we be satisfied in that decision? And her sentimental idea that she's actually going to lose, right? She was so insistent on getting this back. She had to go to the State Department, who went to Indy, who then traveled all the way to Russia to get these guns back. And she was willing to sacrifice it for the chief, who she barely even knew, right? So there's so many moving parts here. And I'm curious to get your take on what you think of this final scene and the entire comic series overall.
You know, it's kind of like the end of Last Crusade, when they ride off into the sunset and, you know, they don't have the Grail. All they have is, like, you know, a restored relationship between Indy and his father, which is kind of what Indy's taking away here, not with his father, of course, but, you know, a better, you know, he's got a good story to tell. In terms of the guns going to Beth, I don't know if that was intended to be, like, her keeping them or her bringing them to the museum or what. I think that's sort of left in the air. But I could see them, you know, going to the museum at some point for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of unclear, you know, what does she gain by getting the guns, right? Obviously, they were stolen, and she's very involved in her grandfather's legacy. But as for what happens next, you know, it is a little bit of a, not a cliffhanger, but sort of like an abrupt ending, maybe. I mean, I really thought the comic was going to go on for a whole other page, and then it just kind of stops right there at the end. But overall, let's talk about some of our final thoughts on Trail and Trial of the Golden Guns, and talk about maybe that Trail and Trial and what it signifies in terms of the Golden Guns and your overall thoughts on this particular comic.
Yeah, I feel like in this one, the story works a little better, and I found this one more, you know, engaging and exciting, besides, of course, the prologue in the last one with Short Round, which I thought was awesome to have. I would have been happy to see Short Round in the whole thing, honestly. And in terms of the plot, I feel like it's a little bit shallow, but it gets the story accomplished. You know, we have a MacGuffin, we have, you know, some sort of emotional aspect to the story too, in terms of, you know, Beth and her grandfather versus, you know, Peter and his grandfather, and the whole restoring honor aspect of it. I feel like there's enough moments throughout the two of them where there's, like, something that I don't feel like is very realistic, or a line that draws me out of the dialogue, that's a little bit disappointing. But overall, I think both of these are great comics to read, And I feel like it's more of a Saturday morning cartoon show of Indiana Jones rather than, you know, a very cinematic film, you know, one of the big blockbusters.
That's a really great point. And I like what you're mentioning there about the idea that the second part of the comic, I think, is a little bit stronger. You know, the first part, I think, of the story, you know, is a little bit shallow. And of course, it does get the story across and it works really well. But I think the prologue as well with Short Round was great. I would have, you know, been over the moon had he been in this entire comic. And of course, that's the main reason we chose to do this comic. But the other reason that this one stands out to me, and just from a general standpoint, you know, the actual story itself with Buffalo Bill, I don't think is up there at the top, you know, in terms of this comic. But the reason I wanted to include this comic and go over it is because I think this one is just so different from the others. And there's so much to unpack here when you get past, you know, the kind of fun spirit of Short Round at the beginning and you get into the Buffalo Bill adventure, is that, you know, Indy, like I mentioned before, almost feels a little bit like a side character. Of course, he's heroic. He retrieves the golden guns. He fights, you know, Salkovich and sort of saves the day. But the star of the show and sort of the one who really is the main protagonist, I think, is Beth, you know, and it's sort of interesting at a time when you have, you know, most adventure films like this with a male lead, somebody who's macho and strong, you know, male dominance. And she's obviously a female role who, like Marion, can sort of fend for herself. She's very smart and intellectual. She can, you know, shoot a rifle. She can ride a horse. You know, she's very, very strong and spirited in that way. But most importantly, there is no romantic storyline with her and Indy at all. Usually Indy is always going after, you know, the love interest or the woman in the story. That doesn't happen here, and not one bit do they have any sort of connection at all. So it's really interesting that she kind of steals the show, I think, and is kind of at the top of this comic. And I think she does a great job as a kind of an interesting character. I obviously think there may be, you know, a little bit less of an interest in Beth, you know, to the readers. I mean, to me, I was more focused on Indy, so maybe that's why, you know, this is kind of an unpopular opinion, but I thought this was structured in a different way. I thought Count Salkovich as a villain was also kind of high up there on my list, as wow, they really kind of expanded him. The dialogue for him was really strong, I thought. His motives were very clear, and just overall, I thought this was, you know, kind of a really unusual and sort of different comic in the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones, but of course, to capture it all, with the great inclusion of Short Round at the beginning, which of course is fantastic. And in any case, that about wraps up today's episode and our programming for the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. That's correct, everybody. Trail and Trial of the Golden Guns was the last two-part story and last comic we are going to review on this podcast. As we mentioned before, unlike what we did for Young Indy, which was going through all of the episodes individually in chronological order, for the comics, we decided to choose some of the best comics, the ones we thought were the most memorable, and talk about those in sort of a combined sort of curated set and go through all of those. And after, I think, over three, almost 4 years now, we've finally gotten through them all. Trial of the Golden Guns was the last one we wanted to talk about. We didn't get any fan requests, so we are going to sort of close the Marvel Comics series reviews for now. Maybe in a couple of years, we'll eventually get back to them and kind of get back into it. Of course, there are so many great stories from the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones, so definitely check more of them out. But as far as reviewing them goes, we're not going to review all 34, and this is where we're going to stop for now. So we're going to take some break from the comics for a while. We've been talking about them for a while. And then finally, we're going to get right back into it with the Dark Horse comic series, a totally different ballgame and playing field there. We are going to do the same thing as the Further Adventures series. We're going to select a couple. Right now, we have 5 stories selected. Shrine of the Sea Devil, Fate of Atlantis, Iron Phoenix, Spear of Destiny, and Thunder in the Orient are the 5 stories we're eventually going to look at. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. I hope you've enjoyed our reviews of the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. We're so excited to get back into more comics. If this was your first time listening and you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing to our podcast. Leave a review. Tell other people what you think about the show. We also have a website. You can learn more about the podcast and contact us by emailing us, sending us a note if you have any questions, comments, things like that. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Once again, I'm Elijah.
And I'm Will.
And until next time, so long, Dr. Jones.